Welcome to the Human Kindness at Work podcast, where you'll hear inspiring stories of people just like you making a difference in their corner of the world. You'll hear how human kindness is at work and how you can be a part of it. I'm Jennifer Clark. Ready to be inspired? Here we go. My guest today is no stranger to my hometown of Kansas City. And if you've watched NFL games over the last three decades, it's likely that you've seen him. Dan Mears was a husband of 31 years to his late wife, Cam. He is a father and a grandfather, author, motivational speaker, and the recently retired mascot for the Kansas City Chiefs, playing the role of Casey Wolf for 35 years. He's the NFL's longest tenured mascot, with 10,000 events under his belt. He was the first NFL mascot inducted into the Mascot Hall of Fame in 2006, and even has the NFL's Mascot Lifetime Achievement Award named after him. Dan is a beloved member of the Chiefs Kingdom, and one of the things I love most about him is the way he has used his influence to make a difference in his world. Welcome to the podcast, Dan Mears.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. So, Alyssa, do you read all those things? And it makes me realize I've been doing this for quite a while now.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. It's such a joy to have you.
Well, thank you.
You know, I think especially for children, when we get to know a character and realize there's a real live human being behind that character, it kind of is mind-blowing. But even for adults, we're so used to seeing just your wolf big hips and big eyes and, you know, like there's a person behind all of that.
Yeah, my hips aren't quite as large when I get the costume off, so not quite as much facial hair either. So
Yeah. Well, for people that are not Chiefs fans and don't know Chiefs history, can you just clear up this little question? Why in the world do the Kansas City Chiefs have a wolf for a mascot?
I get that question a lot, but before they built Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs played in Memorial Stadium, and they had a group of fans that would sit together, and they called themselves the Wolf Pack. And that's where the idea of having a wolf instead of a sheep as the mascot came from. So it all goes back to the old Wolf Pack.
Got it. Okay. So that makes a lot more sense. So Dan, why did you even take the job? Like, that's not a typical job, you know, that people grow up wanting to be. How did that happen?
Yeah, this isn't one of those things where back in elementary school, I thought, you know, I'd sure like to grow up and wear a costume for a living for the rest of my life. And no, I had never been a mascot. I played sports in high school. Then when I went to college, I saw a little article in the school newspaper that said they were going to have tryouts to be Truman the Tiger. I went to the University of Missouri, and I thought, that sounds kind of interesting. And so, sure enough, I tried out. I got the job. For the next 4 years, I ran around in a tiger suit doing sporting events and community events. Had a great time doing it. And then when I graduated, I actually got my first job working in professional baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals as a character called Fred Bird. And so I'm in St. Louis running around in a bird suit doing professional baseball. I get a call from the Kansas City Chiefs saying they were starting up this new Casey Wolf program. Wanted to know if I'd be interested in it. And I thought about it and prayed about it. And, you know, in baseball, they play 81 home games in the summer. Professional football, we play 10 during the fall and the winter. And I'm not the brightest guy around, but I knew that was a good switch to make to the NFL. So I came to Kansas City and, like I said, been here for 35 years.
Wow. That's incredible. They must have seen something in you, you know, to give you a call. That's pretty awesome to catch their attention.
Well, it was a great fit. And the more I prayed about it, the more I realized that Kansas City was kind of where the Lord wanted me to be. And so I came here and I have zero regrets. I've loved my time in Kansas City.
That's awesome. Dan, you're also an author of two books. And, you know, you have said before in your writing and in your speaking that there's a difference between someone's occupation and their preoccupation. I thought that was such a cool concept. I'm curious, what is your preoccupation?
So people know what my occupation was. That was mascot. That's how I'd pay my bills. But my preoccupation, what I'm truly passionate about, for me, it's simply three things. Number one is my faith. Number two is my family. And number three is just using my life, the days that God gives me on this earth, to make a positive impact in the lives of others. And, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, my faith is most important to me, and I'm called to love God and love people. And so that's what I try to do each day. I try to keep things simple. And if I'm loving God and loving people, that's the best way to learn, or that's the best way to live life, I've learned.
Yes, wholeheartedly agree. Your career has been full of making a difference. And I don't ask you this question to put you on a pedestal or make you uncomfortable, but I ask it so that we as listeners can have our eyes opened to the opportunities that we have in our own lives to make a difference. I think sometimes when people talk about the ways they're making a difference, it sparks our imagination and our creativity and opens our eyes to realize, like, I can do stuff. I have resources. I have time. I have energy and ideas to do something. So I ask you this question, that how have you made a difference in your world as Casey Wolf?
Well, number one, I remember a quote. It's in the back of my Bible that says, God did not put us on this earth to make a living. He put us here to make an impact. And I believe that as Christians, that we're called to be difference makers. We're called to be salt and light in this world. We're called to get in the game. I just stand on the sidelines. And so, and by the way, you talked about my books. One of the great things about writing a book I found out is people think you're smarter than you really are. And so I will be the first to tell you that I am I'm an unschooled, ordinary man. And as you know, Jesus used unschooled, ordinary men in the Bible. So any good you see in my life, that's Jesus. Any bad you see in my life, that's still me. I'm a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Trust me, you can ask my family. But I'm a lot further along than I used to be. But yeah, I just try to encourage people to just take that first step. You know, I remember dreaming big dreams, but I'm like, how do you get there? Well, it all starts with that first step. Find something that you're passionate about and then make that phone call, send that text message, go volunteer at the homeless shelter, just do something, because you take that first step and then God starts to open up other doors as it goes along. And so that's what I've loved. That's the most rewarding part of my job. People always ask, why did you stay in as a mascot for 35 years? I did that because I saw it as my platform to make an impact in the lives of others. You know, yeah, the football games were fun. Super Bowls are cool. I'm not going to lie. They're really cool. But at the end of the day, the most rewarding part of my job was the interactions that I would have with people and just going out and hopefully being able to put a smile on people's face and impact their lives in a small way.
I think it's easy for us to compare our lives to other people. And some people might listen and say, well, you have a platform. You are a mascot for an NFL team, the Chiefs at that. But the truth is, we all have a platform, right?
Amen.
We all have influence. We all have a sphere of people that are looking up to us, that are listening to us, that are watching us. So yeah, using your influence is incredibly important. You say in one of your books that doesn't matter if you're the CEO or the mascot, you put yourself as kind of like the tail of the team, right? Yep. Like on the bottom of the totem pole, that each of us has a very specific purpose that's God-given.
And whether you're the CEO or the custodian of your company, whether you're the head coach or you're the team mascot, we've all got that opportunity to make an impact. I tell this to my kids all the time. You don't have to, we're all influencers. You don't have to be on social media to be an influencer. You don't have to be Taylor Swift and have a million followers or your own personal brand. When you think about it, you have the opportunity to be an influencer every time you step into a room. Every time you have an interaction with another person, you've got the opportunity to be an influencer. And I think we forget that sometimes. It is easy to compare yourself. And, you know, I'd tell that to my kids. Don't compare yourselves to others, because that either leads to pride or depression. Okay. Mm. You're either going to become prideful, or you're going to be like, oh, they're so much better than I am. You know what? We've all got an opportunity to be an influencer and to help.
Yeah, that's good. You share pretty publicly about your guiding principles, and I love them. Can you share those with us?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, my faith is most important to me. That's where my identity is. And I'll get teary-eyed talking about this, because Jesus Christ has changed my life in a huge way. Not the first time I've cried talking about it either. What makes me who I am is what I call the great exchange. It's what I gave Jesus, what he gave me in return, or gave me in exchange. What I gave him my sin, my shame, my guilt, my bondage to sin. And in return for that, in exchange, he gave me forgiveness, mercy, grace, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. He gave me abundant life here and now. And then as a bonus, he's got a spot waiting for me in heaven someday where I get to see my wife again, who just went to be with Jesus about 2 months ago now. And it's still difficult, still very difficult, but I'm grateful, number one, that I got to be married to her for almost 32 years. And number two, that thanks to the finished work of Jesus on the cross, I'm going to see her again sometime. I'm still going to miss her, still going to grieve. Grieving's hard work, but I do know that I know that I know I'm going to see her again. Mm-hmm. And thankful for that, I hope that we have in Jesus. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
love
glad
that.
I brought in Kleenex down here with me this morning.
I have one too. Thank you for sharing that. You share a little bit as well in your writing and speaking about life as a contact sport.
Yes.
Life is a team sport, and life isn't a spectator sport. Can you elaborate on those a little bit?
Well, life is definitely a contact sport, you know. And I feel like, you know, I feel like I've been taking the blows this past year. My wife passed away. A month after my wife passed away, my dad passed away. It has just been, it's been a rough couple of months. So it is a contact sport. And it's not just a contact sport for me. Everybody out there is going through something. A lot of times, you don't know it. They might look perfectly fine on the outside, but on the inside, I guarantee you, everybody is going through something. And but life's also a team sport, as we say. We need each other. And I've watched that firsthand over the past 2.5 years that my wife and I have walked this cancer journey. The number of people that have come alongside of us to support us, to pray for us, to send cards and letters and cookies and meals and more cookies and cinnamon rolls and brownies and more cookies. And I mean, it's amazing. I'm not a diabetic yet, as many cookies as I've eaten over the past 2.5 years. But life is a team sport. But then, like you said, life was never meant to be a spectator sport, that we're called to get in the game. We're called to make an impact. And what I think has helped me in my grieving process is I don't want to sit at my house. I know I need to grieve, but I can't just sit in my house, hold up, feeling sorry for myself. I've got to be able to get out. And as you know, I do a lot of speaking, and speaking is therapy for me. It gives me an opportunity to go out and hopefully minister to others, because what we've gone through has given me empathy for what I know a lot of other people are either going through or have also gone through. And God uses our stories, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the tough, and the good times, but especially the bad times, to teach us some incredibly valuable lessons. I've learned more during the hardest seasons of my life than I have during the easy seasons. And real quick, I'll try to share this without crying. That's not going to happen.
That's okay.
One of the things that we've learned on this cancer journey is that there was a lot of mornings I'd wake up with this heavy feeling just because I felt so helpless to do anything about my wife's situation. Okay. I could love her. I could support her. I could pray for her. I could do my best to encourage her each day, but I couldn't fix her problem. Okay. And so, like I said, a lot of days I'd wake up with this just heavy feeling. And on my way past my dresser each day, I always pictured I had two bags that sat there. I had my bag of burdens. I had my bag of blessings. Every day I got to choose which one I was going to pick up. And what I discovered is that even though that bag of burdens just looked huge almost every day, when I would be intentional, when I'd pause, I realized the bag of burdens was, or the bag of blessings was a whole lot bigger than my bag of burdens. And also learned that that bag of blessings was a whole lot lighter to carry through life than the bag of burdens is. And so, but I could, it would take us 2 hours for me to tell you all the lessons I've learned on this, this cancer journey. But I am thankful that God's character does not change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He always has been good, always will be, always has been faithful, always will be. And I've seen it firsthand in my life during these hard times. So I'm going to need an IV after this interview.
Thank you for being so vulnerable. Dan, the people that listen to this podcast, they want to make a difference in the world. They want to be involved. They want to see change. They want to bring hope to people.
Yep.
They want to get outside of themselves. And so what advice would you give to listeners who want to make a difference in their world?
You know, I would say number one, pray, because God answers prayers. He really does. Even when we don't think he's answering prayers, he answers prayers. I encourage people, find out what you're passionate about, you know. And everybody's different. I don't know, you know, that's the great thing about God. He's given us all different passions. Mine is for widows and orphans. And so, you know, I've written two books now, but all the money we make off book sales, we give to charity. So we do a lot of work with, like I said, homeless shelters, orphanages, and food banks. And so, that's my passion. And so we sell these books and all that money goes. And so I try to travel around and go to these orphanages just to make sure that this money that we're giving to them is going to what I think it's going towards. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I just encourage people, find out what you're passionate about and then just start doing something. Just take a step and do something. And God is faithful. He will open the next door, you know. And so that's what I try to encourage people. And then don't get discouraged. Good book says, don't get discouraged, you know. Continue just to press on, knowing that you are making an impact. And even if it's in the life of just one person, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, if listeners want to connect with you, maybe schedule you to speak, order your books, where can they find you online?
You know, if they go to danmears.org, so danmears.org, Mears is spelled with two E's, so M-E-E-R-S, but that's the
best way. We'll
have that
in the show notes so that people can just, it's a click away.
Yes.
So check out those show notes.
I appreciate that.
Dan, thank you for sharing with us today. I think your life is such a good example of the fact that no matter who we are, what title we hold, as you say, we can all use our time, our talent, and our treasure to make a difference in the world. And you're doing that.
Oh, thank you. You know, my parents used to tell us that your life's a lot like your finances. You can do one of two things with money. You can spend it or invest it. Money you spend, you're never going to see it again. But money you invest, that's wise. That'll eventually multiply and return to you. When you think about it, we're going to do the same thing with our lives. You're either going to spend it or you're going to invest it. A life spent selfishly is wasted, but a life that is invested in helping others, encouraging others, influencing others, impacting others, that's going to bear fruit for an eternity. And so that's my challenge to the listeners here today is take your life and invest it, use it to make an eternal impact in the lives of others.
That's so good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. I hope that you get to enjoy this next chief season without a giant mask on. Maybe you can keep those hips a little more still, you know, no crazy stunts or anything, and just sit back with a snack and enjoy the game from a different view.
I do know I'm going to smell better after Chiefs games this year than I've had the last 35 years. So
I'm sure of that. Oh, thank you so much, Dan, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Thanks for listening to Human Kindness at Work. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. It's a great way to help others discover the podcast and be inspired to make a difference right where they are. Until next time, keep an eye out for human kindness at work in your world. Whether it's big or small, it all matters. See you next time.